The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hello there. Obi-Wan Kenobi here, also known as James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan,
Jedi Master Plo Koon,
and many other characters in the world of Star Wars. You're listening to... Shh, don't tell. It's the Secrets of Star Wars. May the Force be with you.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
Hi, I'm Robert King, and you're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we look at the deeper themes and meanings found in the stories and characters in that galaxy far, far away. It's the antepenultimate episode of The Bad Batch. As expected, everyone's moving into position for the big climax to the season and the series. It's Season 3, Episode 13, Into the Breach. And joining me to talk about it are John Coral. Hey, John.
Hello.
And Thomas Salerno. How's it going, Thomas?
Hey there, Robert. I'm good.
Can I just say how happy I am to be able to use the word antepenultimate? It's one of my favorite words. Don't get to use it that often. So, when we left our crooked crew, Hunter, Wrecker, and Crosshair had just rescued ex-Vice Admiral Rampart from Imperial prison so that he can help them find Omega and all the other clones on Tantus. Now they are joined by Echo in an Imperial shuttle. Rampart informs them that they'll have to sneak aboard an Imperial station orbiting Coruscant to steal the coordinates to Tantus. The batch is prepared, and they dress Rampart up as a captain. Poor Rampart, how the mighty have fallen. Thus disguised, they infiltrate, but they can't retrieve the codes directly. The only way is to board a science vessel headed for Tantus. Echo sneaks aboard, disables the proximity sensors, and allows the Bad Batch to lock onto the ship's hull at the last second just as it jumps to hyperspace. Thrilling. Meanwhile, on Tantus, Omega befriends the four other child prisoners, Eva, Jax, Sammy, and Bairn. They warn her against causing trouble, but she tells them that she's escaped before and she's gonna do it again. And she'll take them with her. With a little distraction, she's able to open up the wall of her cell and scout out the lift shafts that run between the cells and throughout the base. She lets the others know that the plan is on. And that's where it leaves us. It's this great setup episode, and there's a lot going on, a lot to talk about. Let's start with just how much leadership and maturity and initiative Omega is showing in this episode. I mean, this is Omega coming into her own, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, when you look at her, she looks like the same age as his other kids, or maybe a little older, but that you can tell, you know, she is a lot wiser, a lot more mature and experienced with stuff. And she just seems confident that she's like, you know, she's already escaped once, like she said, and, you know, probably feels, you know, feels like she can do it again. And it's pretty, you can just tell there's a big level of confidence with her.
Yeah, I like when she says, you know, when they're like, how have you escaped before? And she's like, I've had training.
Yeah.
So you can tell, like, the teachings of the batch have kind of really sunk in. You know, you could tell as soon as she walked out of her little cell in the morning, she was scoping things out with like a military mindset. Okay, where's it? How many escape routes are there? You know, who's watching and where? You know, what is the layout of this room? You know, you could tell she was really thinking tactically about things.
You absolutely know? The professional, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A quiet professional.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Well, and there's something, I found myself a little conflicted about that because I'm like, oh, Omega, yes, you've got this. You know what you're doing. I'm rooting for you. And also being around those other children just reminded me she's still a girl. She's still a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's what? 11, 12, something like that. 13, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of, too, you know, the kind of thing that you don't think about, but that Star Wars does call attention to occasionally, which is, you know, especially during the Clone Wars, where the Jedi are, the Padawans are child soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very disturbing. And, you know, but it's like with Omega, she's clearly a person who's been thrust into this, you know, role. You know, she's on the run from the Empire constantly. She's had to learn to always be aware of her surroundings, to look for threats, you know, to assess situations tactically. And it's sad that in a sense she has not had a quote unquote real childhood where she doesn't have to think about these things. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, many children in war-torn parts of our world may have a similar experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and too, I mean, when you look at those other children, you know, we don't know how long they've been there. Have they been there? You know, we know the one has only been there a short period of time. Mm. But the other ones, the other two, Jax and Eva and Sammy, I think it was, you know, it's like, how long have they been there? Have they just been there a few months? Have they been there multiple years, you know, and stuff? And, you know, because obviously they're being taken when they're young and stuff. So it's like maybe they don't know, you know, much more to a life than what, you know, has been in that in the vault, I guess. Whereas Omega's been out with the Bad Batch and every, you know, and even when she was there the first time, she wasn't under in the vault. She was separated from them all and still had roles of helping out around, you know, the facility, I guess.
I was really struck when she saw Eva with her doll, with Omega's own doll, and she had the restraint to talk about, oh, what are we doing out here? Oh, it's a game. And then she asked about the doll directly, but like, she was not like, I expected her to, I don't know, break down or to show signs of loss or longing or grief or something, but she was 100% in tactical mode. And I mean, there's a sense in which this started when she gave herself up to save Pabu. It's like, okay, I'm just like shutting down everything except the tactical in order to get through this situation. Focus on the mission, you know, kind of turning into Crosshair in a way. Mm. And again, it's like admirable skills and ability, really kind of tragic that this is the situation she's in and this is what she needs to do to survive.
I was just going to say, I think though, when she looks around, she also is aware and understands, you know, she can see how sad the children are, and she can maybe see, oh, that's little stuffed or doll, whatever, you know, something that's bringing Eva comfort, and mm-hmm. obviously she needs it more than I do at this point. And also, it kind of gives her a little insight into Dr. Carr when she says, well, she's one of the good ones.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So maybe that also makes, you know, Omega feel better about things as well. And she did leave the doll the first time because, she, you know, in order to escape. So maybe she did lose some of that attachment, but I think it mostly was, though, just that, like I said, Eva probably felt like Eva needed it more than she did and felt that empathy for it.
And it was interesting, you know, the kind of questions she was asking, you know, very tactical, you know, like, do they always watch us? how often do the droids take our vitals? You know, mm-hmm. do the clones ever come in here? You know, clearly trying to, you know, assess the situation. And like, one thing I was wondering, okay, so the only thing I knew about this episode going in, because someone told me, was Omega swipes a scalpel from Dr. Carr's, like, thing. And at first I was like, whoa, okay, what's she going to do with that? But it turned out she's just, yeah. like, you know, opening up that panel in the wall. But there was a question for me about whether Emery knew that...
That the tool had been taken?
Yeah. Because uh-huh. it seemed to me like Emery's the kind of person who would be... And I say this, like, because I have, you know, obsessive compulsive, you know, OCD kind of tendencies. I could see her as being someone who would notice that one of her tools was missing from the tray, you know, like. So I just wonder
that too.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, she didn't notice one of her tools was missing. I'm like, okay. So yeah, that got me thinking.
And Emery absolutely knows what Omega is capable of.
Mm hmm.
So, if she noticed the tool was missing, yeah, that would be hugely significant.
And then afterwards, you know, she's talking with the other scientists, and the one brings up, like, should we really have put Omega with the others? You know, she's someone who's tried to escape before and is good at it. You know, should we have really put her with the other? And Emery just shuts them down. I'm in charge. I'm the chief scientist. We're doing this my way. And I'm like, mm-hmm. it for me, it brings up interesting questions. You know, like, you know, Emery's loyalty is being tested in these previous few episodes. So it's like, whose side is she really on at this point? You know?
Well, and if I remember right, it wasn't her decision to put Omega in the vault in the first place.
No, yes, maybe Hemlock.
Yeah, it was Hemlock who escorted her in there.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's Emery's decision to keep her in there. I don't know.
Right, maybe she has discretion of whether Omega stays in the vault or not.
Well, you know, when Jax tried to escape, you know, he got put in isolation. So is there isolation units in the vault too, maybe, that, you know, they could have mm-hmm. put her in? So she's still in the vault, but she's not with the other kids. You know, that's what that could be.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
Because, you know, Jax, you know, wasn't there for what, like 2 days or something, and it says punishment, or I forget, you know, and that's when Emery then gave Eva the doll to show that, you know, she wasn't really lying to her. She just didn't know that mm-hmm. Jax would get punished that way. So maybe there's different levels in the vault for, you know, interaction or non-interaction and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm still wondering how elaborate at this point Omega's plan for getting out really is, because she's found a way out of the vault going mm-hmm. up or down the lift shafts that you can access from the cells. But, like, I'm like, does she know where those go, or is she just going to wing it? You know?
Like, well, it's a start, I guess. As far as the lab, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you say, it's a start. But, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, like, it's very MacGyver, you know, kind of make up the plan as you go along, which I feel like is appropriate for the Bad Batch, because, you know, they're kind of A-Team or MacGyver, kind of like, we'll do what plan? We'll just kind of wing it, you know, until we win, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to bring this up a little later when we talked about, you know, the Batch themselves and their plan or lack thereof to rescue Omega. But yeah, as far as Omega goes, she's very much following their example of, you know, just do the next thing to get you out of the situation you don't want to be in. You know, this is a frying pan. We need out of here. Is there a fire outside? I don't care. We're getting out of the frying pan right now.
Mm-hmm. Very much solve the immediate problem. Don't worry about problems that come later, you know.
And then, I think they're absolutely deliberate about being ambiguous about Emery. And she know that Omega has the scalpel, the tool, whatever it is? What is her plan as far as a plan might go? You know, what's going on in her head? We know she's, Nala Se gave her a talking to, and Omega gave her a talking to, but we don't know if she's got the, she's been told you have the power to do something, to make a change. And we're not sure what she's going to do with that. I'm wondering if I almost get the sense that letting Omega take the scalpel is maybe her way of saying, oh, well, Omega's better at this than I am. I'm going to let her take the lead on this. Right. I'm going to absolving herself of responsibility to rescue Omega, because Omega doesn't need rescuing. Omega can take care of herself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I still can't help thinking somehow the question has to be put to Emery, directly, and she has to come down one side or the other.
Right.
Yeah, because right now, for all we know, it's we know she cares about the children in general. I mean, she was surprised that they were children, and then especially the youngest one that Cad Bane brought the week, earlier and stuff, that, she obviously has a concern for the children. But then the question is she doing it just for the children? You know, is she just trying to make life better for the children as they're in the vault? Or is she, like you said, trying to let Omega or help somehow so that Omega can maybe take care of business, or, something more can be done without her maybe being, the obvious direct involvement or something. I don't know.
I can just imagine, maybe in the final episode, she stands between Hemlock to let the kids get away, and Hemlock says, "Why are you doing this?" And Emery just breaks into song. "I believe the children are the future." Okay, maybe not. Maybe.
Maybe in Lego Star Wars.
Maybe in Lego. Yes. I do want Emery to be a hero. I really want her to come down on the side of good, but I don't know. I don't know. What about the other kids? Jax has tried to get out and got slapped down for it.
Mm. I thought he was going to oppose the plan, but he seems to be going along with it.
Well, Omega's a pretty strong personality at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Because I thought he'd be afraid of getting in trouble again and being put in solitary. But, I thought they would use that to create a bit more tension. But apparently he's just going along. I mean, I'm sure he wants out as much as anybody else. It's just that,
Well, the thing is, too, though, is the kids were pretty passive when that one doctor came down when Omega was trying to test out the scalpel. It's not like one of them said, "Oh, doctor, can you come over here for a moment to try to give Omega a little time?" Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think they're kind of receptive, but they're also not fully invested in this plan of action either at this point. I mean, Omega gives a good point. "I've already done it before and I've had help and I'm taking you with me and all that stuff." But then at the same time, those children seem pretty tentative and stuff. So maybe as we go along, you'll see them get more interested in the plan or more active. But, that you can just tell they've been in this situation for a long time and are pretty timid, I guess, or because of, what they've been involved with all those years or all that time, whatever it might be.
And I guess the three other ones are pretty mobile, but then you've got, Owl, Bat, Teddy Bear guy, who's just like a baby. So,
Bairn. Bairn is literally the character's name. Yeah.
Okay. But
he's just a wee Bairn.
Yeah. It's like one of them is going to have to lug him along you know, and that'll be awkward getting up and down the shaft, but...
Well, Wikipedia describes them as force sensitive. So I don't know if we, I don't remember seeing any of them actually exercising any force powers that we would recognize, but I think it's just been implied.
Yeah.
But Wikipedia seems to confirm that. Yeah.
Oh, Bairn does. That's why he was kidnapped. He
oh yeah. Yeah.
He pushed
yeah,
that
of course,
pot
of course.
Over or whatever it was.
I don't know. I wonder if we'll see some force dynamics coming into this. Why would they plant that seed if it weren't expected to bloom at some point? Mm. But yeah. We shall see. We shall see. I loved some of the visuals, and especially there's that one shot toward the end of the episode where they had like the direct overview. I think it was just a transition from the Bad Batch's adventure back to Tantus, and it was that direct overview of Mount Tantus with the circular rings.
Mm-hmm.
and then it cuts to, you know, sort of match cuts to a direct overhead shot of the vault itself, with the circle of the walls and the circle of the tables. And it was just, I don't know, it was a very eye-catching transition. And there were some other, there are lots of great visuals throughout this series. That one really caught my eye this episode.
I liked when that establishing shot of when they were back on the it looked like the Kamino cloud base from that episode in a previous season.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
because, you know, the buildings kind of look, they didn't look like Cloud City, they looked more like Topoka City, just in the cloud. So I assumed that was a place they knew, so the batch went there as their rendezvous point. But the establishing shot of it in the sort of orangey clouds was really cool, you know, brings back Empire Strikes Back. And the other thing visual I noticed was that space station that orbits Coruscant is straight out of a Ralph McQuarrie painting of Coruscant for when Coruscant was originally going to be in Return of the Jedi. And there's a painting that he made of kind of, they look almost like half a Death Star, but then with like, but the bottom half is more skeletal and stuff like that, and they're orbiting Coruscant. So I caught that straight away. I was like, oh yeah, that's straight out of the Ralph McQuarrie concept art.
Where did you see that? Was it like in a art of, or?
Yes, I have a book. It's unfortunately it's out of print now. I think it's called The World of Star Wars, but it's Ralph McQuarrie concept art from the original trilogy, along with some little bits of short fiction interspersed throughout. It's a cool book. I wish it was still in print. Thanks, eBay, for helping me to get a copy.
Oh, right on. Well, maybe we should shift gears to the Batch themselves and their adventure trying to find Omega. That was, again, kind of an action-packed episode on their part. You know, infiltration and getting in and getting the job done. A lot of fun MacGyvering and A-teaming and such in that. I appreciated very much that they kept their weapons on stun. This is a stun mode operation. I think it was Ryan last episode who talked about, how sometimes the Batch have their guns on kill and sometimes they have them on stun.
Yeah.
And this is definitely a stun mode operation. Good on you valuing life, Bad Batch.
Well, I think too, they didn't want to draw too much attention to themselves as they're sneaking around. And I think the stun setting is also kind of like a stealth setting. I'm pretty sure it's quieter than the blaster bolt sound effect.
Oh, wow, is quieter than the pew pew.
Yeah, and the, you know, and I guess you don't smell like the, you know, the the smoke that comes out of, you know, like the blaster bolts that's been drilled into somebody.
Yeah, yeah. How about you, John? What did you think of the infiltration of the, well, I mean, even the lead up to the infiltration, the planning and the whole A-teaminess of it?
I liked it overall. I mean, it actually, with Rampart, they are able to add a little bit of humor to the whole thing, you know, with the, and they say like, well, you do your thing or whatever it was. And, you know, then we'll do, you know, what we need to do or something and to get us in there. And, but, you know, it was just, I thought that I like that. I'm actually glad that Hunter mentioned something about, and I was wondering, it was like, well, what stops Rampart from just turning him in once he's on the base? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, I know I was on this prison, but they, you know, they kidnapped me and now here's the Bad Batch. You take them, you know, or something. But then when he mentioned how they betrayed him and then, you know, before you, you know, betray us, remember, we're the ones that helped you kind of stuff. Because I was always wondering about that with Rampart, because I'm thinking, you know, the guy keeps going further and further along in this process, that a lot further than he ever wanted to go, because now he's on the heading to Tantus, you know.
Yeah. So,
and that was probably the last place he's going to want to go, like a lot of these people. Uh-huh. So, but I like that. And then I did like the, also as the lead up was like how they, you know, they are during the infiltration, how they stunned the one trooper and then he's getting link calm. It's like, nope, everything's okay. Just a, you know, malfunction here with the, or was that later on with the, that was later on because they thought it was an astromech droid doing something in cargo or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was Echo.
Yeah, so
it is great to have Echo back, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. And I like that he stole a shuttle. I'm like, the Empire, like, it seems really easy to steal Imperial shuttles throughout the whole tenure of the Empire. You know, I get that they're probably very common, but I feel like later the Empire should have learned about shuttles getting stolen and having bad access codes.
Yeah, the like, they don't seem to have their records updated very frequently. You know, like even going back to Jedi, you know, it's an older code, but it checks out. I was going to pass them. It's like, if it's an old code, why are you going to pass them unless it's like normal for, oh, maybe they were so far out that they missed the update on the code. Mm-hmm. That's normal. Wait, why is that normal? So, yeah, somehow communications in this galaxy far, far away are not great.
You know, as you mentioned, that is, it just kind of also though shows you the vastness of the Empire. I mean, it's like, I mean, every time, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at it, it's like, this was like, what was it, Space Station or whatever it was, 003, I forget what they called it, 003 or whatever. And then they get to that thing, and that thing is just huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, oh, it's just a little platform where you land, you, you know, fill up and then move on with the code. I mean, it was a pretty, you know, pretty big place too. And then, so it's like, as I've been also reading more of the, or listening to these various audiobooks, you know, it's just, you get the idea of how big the Empire is more so, and the problems with communication and that kind of thing. But also what was neat though, is like, we knew, like we were mentioning earlier about Omega and how, you know, she's all business, you know, the Bad Batch is all business too. It's like, all right, you know, he's like, those codes, they change them every rotation. Well, that's why we're going to get taken care of now. You know, it's like, we're just, they're not just, yeah. You know, they don't have time to build these long detailed plans. It's just like, okay, we got to get in there. We got to get this next code to get up, you know, the coordinates so we can get to the, you know, Tantus. And so, I mean, they're quick and efficient. It's not, you know, there's no waste of time. And
yeah,
so it's kind of neat seeing, even though they're separated, Omega is kind of doing the same thing with her stuff with while the Bad Batch is doing their thing too.
Well, that's what she means when she says she's had training.
Mm. In terms of Rampart, what, first, I like, you know, them giving him the captain's uniform. He's like, I cannot wear this. I was a vice admiral. And of course, like, you've been demoted.
You've been demoted.
You know? And like that, like, but you like Rampart, but if you wear your vice admiral's uniform, you're more likely to get recognized by somebody. But In any case, like I like when he's able to get them past the guy who wants to check their records or whatnot. Like, you're not on my manifest or whatever. And I like how he afterwards he's like, oh, I've missed this, you know, just the yes. like the petty power of being a few ranks over somebody and being able to outrank them. You know, you can tell, you know, like, that's the part of the job that Rampart likes the most, being able to boss people around.
What good is authority if you can't abuse it? Rampart, so if I follow this correctly, both Rampart and the lieutenant who is checking on the shuttle manifest are on board the shuttle now as they're heading off to Tantus at the end of the episode. The Rampart is in the jump seat and the lieutenant has been knocked out by Wrecker. Is that right?
Oh yeah, you're right. So we've got, I didn't catch so that. Yeah. Huh.
So we've got two, well, one Imperial officer and one ex-Imperial officer on this shuttle. Neither of them want to be there.
Oh wait, no. Did they not show the Imperial officer? There was I think a brief shot of him outside the shuttle as it was taking off.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I mean, my thought was because Wrecker put him there, and then wasn't he wearing his hat or something? He took it off him and put it back on the
Wrecker carried the guy out of the shuttle and then put his hat back on, and they left.
Okay,
him yeah.
Okay,
because Wrecker was wearing his cap.
So it's just Rampart who is on the shuttle, and he's reluctant, which is, you know, definitely not going to cause any complications for anything further down the line. Definitely not.
If he is on Team Bad Batch, he does know how Tantus works, to, you know, and stuff. So it's like he can give more input into that. But if, you know, but like you said, you could definitely see him turning or having issues once he gets there to, as well. But I mean, I could see him as both a big plus or a big negative, just depending on how they want his character to be, I guess.
Well, yeah. Is there any part of you that thinks, okay, maybe Rampart will come around and show some, you know, some bit of heroism as well? Or is Rampart maybe unredeemable at this point as a character?
I wonder if he just wants to stick it to Hemlock, you know, or something, you know, it's like, you know, or somebody. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I'm not sure who he blames or, I meant to watch, you know, how that all ended and, you know, where he gets, you know, imprisoned and stuff at the end, but, you know, everything that went down. But I'm just wondering is, you know, it's obviously once he was out of the picture, then Hemlock was completely in charge, right? So, of this whole process. So maybe, you know, maybe there's something he'd want to do with that. I don't know. But that. But
I think Rampart's out for Rampart, basically. You know, his loyalty is to himself. And whatever's going to get him, like, I don't think he wants to rejoin the Empire necessarily, but he doesn't want to get caught again and put back into prison.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you think that's enough to lead him on the path, maybe even on the first step of the path toward virtue, or has he maybe started down the dark path and forever will it dominate his destiny?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I don't feel like he's open to necessarily being influenced, you know, by virtue just yet. I think he's still kind of influenced by self-serving motives, you know. I think, you know, he wants to stay alive, you know, like I think that's why he doesn't want to go to Tantus, you know. He's like,
yeah,
if we go there, I have a good chance of getting killed. I don't want that, you know. What I'm interested in, though, is that maybe like you were kind of saying, John, he might stick it to Hemlock out of spite, or get the Imperials to fight each other, because we know that Tarkin is just salivating for a chance to shut down Tantus Base so that he can allocate the funds for Stardust. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of all this, Tarkin just shows up with a fleet and does an orbital bombardment of Tantus or something.
Maybe the Empire becomes their own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done that before, so.
True enough. I do love that, like, we definitely have our mustache twirly villains, like Tarkin, mm-hmm. and like Hemlock, but I really like how some of these bad guys are deeply conflicted and complex characters in their motivations, like Emery and like Rampart, and I'm just, yeah, it's fun to not know where they're going, to be able to relate to them on some levels and just know, can't go there on other levels, and I just love the complexity, the understanding of how complex the human heart is, and how temptation can reach in and grab you and kind of lock you into a place you don't want to be. How fear can do that. How ambition can do that. I think these characters are like really good examples of what it's like to be human in a fallen world.
The big thing with the Empire, though, too, it's like you've always had the level of evil at certain points, like with the Emperor and, you know, this Tantus stuff and various things. But then you also had the people who just feel that the Empire is there to keep order, protect, and, you know, it's like, and they see it as a, they don't know the other inner workings, and that's why you still have some clones that are with the Empire and some who have defected. So mm-hmm. it's like there has always been the, you know, the group, you know, significant group of people that have seen positives of what the Empire does and with these nations, you know, and how they keep order and, you know, and stuff. And that's kind of the, you know, that's another thing too. It's like you have a lot of people that actually probably are good people, but they don't understand what the Empire truly stands for and stuff. I mean, because they see, you know, from their perspective and not all the way up to the Emperor's perspective or what other Tarkins or someone else.
It's hard to see where anybody, like any of our heroes are exactly going to draw the line. And I think one of the reasons I was glad to see that our Bad Batch were going in on stun mode at this point is because it feels like they are also being presented with a lot of dark options, you know, possibilities to, you know, go over to the dark side in their chase for Omega, in their quest for freedom. And I am glad to see that they are consistently, and the show is consistently showing them, you know, doing what they have to do, but doing it in as humane a way as possible, and trying to very much differentiate themselves from all of the evil and darkness that the Empire stands for. It's like it's not just they want to oppose the Empire because of its you know, because it's a tyranny. They want to oppose the Empire because it's evil and inhumane. So we talked about this a little bit earlier. Do you think the Batch has any sort of plan coming into this voyage to Tantus here? On previous episodes of this podcast, we talked about, like, you know, wanting to see everybody, like, get back together and go in for a full-on assault on Tantus. And I don't get the sense that there's anybody on this shuttle except for Echo and you know, and our Bad Batch, you know, like where are all the other rebel clones? Are they part of this at all, or are they off somewhere doing other missions?
Yeah, I almost feel like Rex wouldn't have wanted to have, like, if they go all in, there's a risk that they all get neutralized. And I feel like maybe Rex didn't want to take that risk.
But, you know, it's a lot to
risk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, he's constantly is talking about Tantus as well. We know Tantus is out there. We know, and we've got to rescue our guys out there. Whereas, you know, then Hunter's like, are you crazy? You know, it's like, he's always looking out for Omega. I mean, he's come around, but I'm saying it's always been primarily Omega. And every time Rex or Echo want to do something much bigger, he has his reservations of, well, we're going up against the Empire, you know, and stuff. But I kind of wonder about that, too. It's like, my initial thought was, is the idea was to get the coordinates and then to amass a big, you know, even if it's not a full-on attack or at least some kind of special ops thing where you'd have multiple factions coming in. But now it seems like they only just have the one set up. You know, it's going to be the Bad Batch because of how they're going to have to do it. Unless they can, or is the idea get in, get the coordinates, get it out, and then have people, you know, have more help come to them. I don't know. But I was also wondering, where's, you know, is Batcher on the on that ship? Or, I don't know if we saw him or her the last time. And then it's, you know, cause Batcher is aware of all the dangers in the wood or the forest there and stuff on Tantus. So did you figure,
I don't think we saw Batcher at all, but I think Batcher is on the shuttle. Well, okay. No, I don't think we saw Batcher at all, but I can't imagine they would leave her behind.
Right. I mean, but I could see her playing a significant role if they, you know, unless, you know, because I don't think they're going to land right in the middle of Tantus. I think they'd be coming in from the outside somewhere, you know, too, or something, but I don't know.
The thing about Tantus is that it's such a nut to crack that there's two ways you could go for it, right? You could do for the small infiltration, which is what it seems like they're going for. Or you could come in with the sledgehammer, you know, or do like a hammer and anvil thing where you have multiple strike teams and it distracts everybody at Tantus, you know, like trying to plug multiple holes in the dike, you know, as they have, you know, different forces come at them from different directions while you slip in and get Omega, you know, like there seems to be multiple ways you could do this. But yeah, it seems like that they're just making this up as they go along. And at this point, the Batch just wants to get there, get Omega, and get out.
But yeah, like you were saying, John, Rex is all about, we've got to get our clones. We've got to take care of our clone. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to make sure that all the clones are rescued and brought out. And Omega's on board with that too. Now she may see the impossibility of that at some point. But we also have seen in Star Wars the sort of consistent effectiveness of a small, insignificant force versus the giant, overbuilt, overthunk, you know, might of an Imperial facility.
Right. I think we're going to get a very Rogue One ending where the small force is overwhelmed and then backup arrives. Like in Rogue One, where you had the Rebel fleet show up over Scarif. You know, I think we're going to get the Batch in there. The Batch, you know, tries their best. And then somehow, I mean, the last episode is called the Cavalry Arrives, or the Cavalry is here. And so I assume that, you know, Rex and Wolf and Gregor and everybody else are just going to show up, you know, like that there's going to be some contingency plan. Yeah. Even if
like
it's
Rogue One or Rise of Skywalker.
Right. Yeah. Where the kind of everybody is here fleet shows up. Yeah. I mean, Star Wars has done that multiple times, and it's very effective when it happens. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something like that.
That is a rhyme I think we can feel coming. Yeah.
And that's why I think, too, we might see Tantus obliterated, because, like, you know, in Rogue One, Tarkin is completely willing to destroy the Scarif base just to take out the rebels on it. So, you know, I could see the Empire, you know, willing to write off Tantus base if they've got the information or data that they need and they see the base has been compromised. Oh, we'll just glass the place.
So maybe the cavalry that arrives is the Imperial cavalry. One of the things I love about the Bad Batch is it constantly keeps me guessing about what direction they're going to go. And they usually go in a direction I don't anticipate at all. And I love it. The Empire is absolutely capable of, you know, we've seen this with lots of, you know, Tarkin, absolutely. Thrawn, to some extent, is willing to completely obliterate his opponents. The Emperor doesn't have opponents, but he doesn't care who gets lost along the way, you know, and so it's, yeah, there's something, I don't know, ironically satisfying about seeing the Empire shoot itself in the foot.
Yeah.
At the same time, one of the things the Batch has constantly done is shown a spotlight on the humanity of the clones. Not a better way, maybe, than the Clone Wars series, but in a different way. And I think it's brought it up more explicitly than the Clone Wars. How dehumanized the clones are within the Empire, and how truly human they are and deserve to be treated. And I don't think it would be a satisfying ending to see Tantus completely taken out if the clones are taken out with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know how many are being experimented on there, but it's not a small number. It's not a handful of clones. It's hundreds, thousands.
I mean, it's a big facility, too. It's carved into a mountain, so there's the potential, to be quite a number of prisoners.
And in at least a few shots, it's shown there are other mountains around the main one that also have that sort of docking ring set into them. So, yeah, I'm not sure how grandiose the facility is, but there's a lot going on here, and there are a lot of lives at stake. I don't know. It's kind of like the action movie dilemma of you've got, or maybe the Marvel movie dilemma. You know, you've got all of the gray aliens coming in to show how powerful our heroes are in taking out all these gray aliens. But, you know, there are people here too. And you know, what's the moral status of all these people who are, you know, to say nothing of the soldiers, those who are, you know, innocent victims, and for that matter, even the scientific staff who are, you know, not on the right side of things, but they're not combatants either. There's a part of me that just wants to see Tantus blown out of the universe, but I don't want to see the victims blown away.
It's like the World War II dilemma. Do you bomb a concentration camp? You know, or do you bomb a place like Peenemünde, which was a Nazi lab where they used slave labor to build super weapons like the V1 and V2 rockets, and the scientific staff knew all about it. And it's like, so it's like, you know, so are they innocent or not? And you've also got the slave workers. It's like, so do you bomb a place like Peenemünde? You know, it's the central place where these things are built, you know, that hit London and other allied cities, you know. So in wars, you kind of have to make that calculus, but it's like, it's rough, right? You know, like, because either way, it seems like evil is going to be done regardless, right? It's like, and it's almost like a choice of lesser evils, which you can't even really know sometimes if you've made the right decision until after the fact.
Yeah. I mean, the church's just war criteria tends to err on the side of protect the innocent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Pacem in Terris, like, straight up says, like, the obliteration of cities and civilian neighborhoods is absolutely forbidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Something like the research facility, the Nazi research facility you're talking about, which sounds like it might be one of the models for Tantive.
Mm-hmm. It might be, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with that bit of history myself, but it sounds like that's a little more of, you know, one of these where it's
kind of a gray.
It's not 100% clear whether this is a military target or not.
Right. It's like, it's definitely like a military target in the sense that it builds and tests military equipment, but you also have civilian scientists who work there, and you have slaves who are completely innocent being forced to work on this stuff.
And there's always the argument of, if we don't do this, if we don't, you know, commit this amount of violence that at least risks or even certainly harms the innocent, the civilians, you know, well, we could lose the war. This could lose the war for us. This could lose everything we're fighting for.
Or at the very least, cause civilians on our side to be killed later.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, there's the... I mean, today is liturgically, this is Good Shepherd Sunday.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, the first Good Shepherd, David, who stands up to these giants and goes into impossible situations, you know, facing down against a lion, facing down against Goliath, facing down against his own son, and refuses to harm the innocent, and puts himself in a vulnerable situation and risks losing everything and trusts in God. You know, the Lord is my shepherd.
Right. And it's,
you know, my enemies will not prevail ultimately. And this is the lesson of the cross as well, you know. Even when Christ's enemies prevail over him, he still has the victory in the resurrection.
Oh yeah. It's definitely something that, you know, given you just need to like turn on the news to see these kind of like things in action, where it's like, you know, it can make you feel very uncomfortable as a Christian, where it's like, you know, it's like what is the proper response to very obvious violence and that is being committed, is like, you know, do you perpetuate the cycle of violence, you know? And I think Star Wars has in part addressed that in the past, but it's like,
it's at least raised the question.
In terms of like what our heroes are motivated by, is that essentially, you know, Omega is like a little sister or a daughter to these guys, and they want Omega back, and they're willing to pretty much do anything in order to in order to accomplish that, you know? Yeah. And I think that they're going to be tested, you know, like you have here in your notes, Robert, you know, how dark will this series become? It will be interesting to see to what lengths the Batch is willing to go to get Omega back, and what actually are they willing to cross lines that, you know, moral lines that perhaps they shouldn't.
I mean, as a writer and as a lover of stories, I hope that they get the chance to face down that question, that temptation, like really directly. Like, I hope they get a chance to say, we can, I don't know, let's say rescue Omega at the cost of all these other lives or something, you know, and you know, all you have to do is embrace the dark side and you can have everything you want. I mean, that's a very common theme in Star Wars, but I don't know. We will see whether and how they do that. We've got two episodes left. This is definitely a setup episode. And so, it, you know, it's an episode that's meant to raise these questions and very deliberately sort of wave in our face that we don't have the answers yet.
Mm.
Because it wants us to watch the last two episodes. this has been a great conversation. Any final thoughts to wrap up this antepenultimate, got to use it again, episode?
Well, what I was going to say is what I thought was kind of interesting, and I thought about it after watching the show more so, but it was the fact that until they got separated again, it was the reunion of all the Bad Batch without Tech, right? The original Bad Batch, you know, and then to see how effective Echo was, you can see, you know, kind of, you know, I didn't remember him being as much of a, I don't know what the term would be, but combatant, I guess, or, you know, or like, he's like almost like a ninja getting in there as he's, you know, so quick and efficient and infiltrating places. And then with his, you know, mechanical arm and stuff, and then getting the information he needs, he's like a combination of Tech and like Crosshair or something like that. And it just, you know, I really like seeing his character, and I wish we could have seen more of him over the years, because, you know, once he left with Rex, you only got to see him bits and pieces and mostly just show up and then leave again and stuff. And I liked seeing his role in this whole episode. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, when it was over, the episode, I was like, wait, didn't this episode just start 10 minutes ago? It went by really fast. Like, there was very little, like, you know, breaks or slowdowns. You know, I was fully invested. And when it was over, I was like, oh, now we have to wait till next week.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, it was action almost. I mean, even the Omega side was the action of the escape setup, right? So,
right. There was tension. The tension kept up throughout the whole episode, I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot. I mean, for an episode where it's basically a let's get ready for the final conflict, there was a lot going on here. It's given us a lot to think about. I hope it's given you listeners a lot to think about as well. If you have thoughts you'd like to share with us, please share them. You can drop us an email at starwars@sqpn.com. We've got a great Facebook community at StarQuest Media. My favorite place is our Discord server. It's very active. You can get access to our Discord server through our website, sqpn.com/Discord. You can be part of our community and help us grow when you subscribe, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, wherever it is you're listening to us right now, whether it's Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, we're all over the place. Check out our YouTube channel, even SQPN YouTube. Those of you who are on Patreon, you are very directly making it possible for us to continue creating The Secrets of Star Wars and all the other shows we have here at SCPN. This episode, we would especially like to thank Charles S., Anthony W., Trace G., I hope I pronounced that right, Chastity E., and Chris K. Thank you for your generous support. If you'd like to join them in keeping our work going, please visit sqpn.com/give. I think that's it for today. Until next time, Thomas, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Robert.
And John, it's always great to talk with you.
Thanks, I had a great time.
Right on. Once again, I have been Robert King. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Stargate. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/stargate.